With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Necessarily starting now, but I've pressed record.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll just start when we start.
Yeah.
And
we're
just warming up, which I wish I had pressed record earlier, because we both said nice things about Dan Mersch, but we can't repeat those nice things. So that's it.
Sorry, Dan.
Yeah. Too bad. It's a real shame because we both said really lovely things about it. But anyway.
Yeah.
I tell you what this is. It's, I'm going to ask you 10 really stupid questions.
Okay.
And then it'll all be over.
All right.
That's the best way to describe it. It's the only way to describe it.
Okay.
So, fuck it. We'll start.
Go on then.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Leghole. By the way, Paul, the podcast is called Leghole.
Leghole.
It's called Leghole, you know, and thank you very much for falling into the Leghole today. Okay, you never guess what, everyone. My special guest, and he is a very special guest, is one of my favourite funny people in the whole world. It's the actor and comedian and all-round brilliant guy. It's Paul Putner, everyone. Hey. And everyone claps. Everyone claps. Everyone applauds.
Yeah.
It's very exciting to talk to you because I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh.
I'm a big fan of your TV work, but I really loved the show that I went to see you do a few years ago in Edinburgh about madness.
Oh, yeah.
Called Paul Putner's Embarrassment. That was the title, right?
That was the title, yeah. And sometimes it did feel like that.
It's a good title. It's a good title. But I want to talk to you about Matt. Here's the thing. I make up these stupid childish questions for everyone so I can somewhat belittle them.
Sure.
Well, I can't belittle you because I'm too much of a fan. So there's going to be a bit of Crawley bumlickiness in the next 40 minutes. But also, I sort of just want to talk about madness.
Okay.
Well, I have to go through a few questions, like pretend that I'm not, I don't want to talk about madness. I'll pretend I want to talk about other things.
Right.
But really, just know that right now I really want to talk about madness and nothing else.
Righto.
Thank you for appearing on the podcast, Paul Putner. I've got 10 questions. And from these 10 questions, from your answers to the 10 questions, should I say, I'm going to put together a psychological profile of you by the end of the podcast. So by the end of the podcast, you will know exactly who you are.
All right.
Yeah, you should be a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's going to be quite a bit of Crawley bumleckiness, so I think you probably come out all right. But
are you adhering to any particular kind of psychiatry, psychotherapy? Or?
No, I'd say just bitterness. That's what I'm using. Just a little bit of sarcasm and bitterness. That's what I do, Paul.
Right.
And so here we go. The first question and the last question are always the same questions. Everyone who comes on Leghold gets these questions. But there's eight questions in the middle that have been written specifically to get the psychological profile of Paul Putner out of Paul Putner.
Right.
Paul Putner, here is question number one. Do you like sherry?
Do I like sherry? It's not something I've ever really indulged in. My mum had some cooking sherry, which was a cliche, wasn't it, that housewives in the 70s would be getting on cooking sherry.
What's the difference? What is the difference between cooking sherry and sherry? Isn't it all cooking sherry?
I don't know.
Or is it all sherry? No.
Like cooking chocolate and normal chocolate.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I don't think there's much difference. But my other half, she has, like, when she makes like a Christmas pudding, she'll have brandy in the cupboard. Mm. And, you know, when it's late on a Friday night and you go to the fridge and there's nothing left. Yeah. Sure. where's all my Christmas pudding ingredients?
You'll quickly make a Christmas pudding. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
exactly. So my relationship with sherry, I don't really have one.
No. Here's the thing. I don't know. I can't recall ever having a sherry, but I think I hate it. I don't think I like the look of it. I can picture what it smells like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just don't want to go near it.
Do you think it will ever have a comeback like gin?
Oh, yeah. Or like, sort of like, you know, these artisan gins, like craft, like a craft beer version of sherry.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I don't understand this, why suddenly everyone likes gin. Do you remember about 20 years ago when everyone was suddenly drinking absinthe?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I was one of those wankers.
Yeah. How long? Maybe it was even longer ago than that. I remember going making me one at his party, a little house party. And I thought I was going to be hallucinating like Byron.
Well, here's the thing. I remember for years, anytime absinthe came up in conversation, I'd enthuse about it, going, no, it really is. It's a hallucinogenic, blah, blah, blah. It's amazing. I drank it once. And I just saw all these colours and shapes and things. Mm. And the thing is, I always forget that was the one and only night that I had acid. And I think it might be the acid, really, rather than the absinthe.
Because around that same time, it was the liquid Coke, wasn't it, what they used to say, with Red Bull and vodka, where people were saying, oh, if you drink Red Bull and vodka, it's like doing a line of Coke. And you think... And everyone would be necking this stuff and then just having palpitations and being covered with the alcohol monkeys all night. You know, it was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I just quite like a lager.
Yes.
I quite like a lager, Paul.
A lager top, even.
Do you know what? There you go. I'm going to put Puritanical down in your profile. Puritanical. Yeah, that's good. It's good to have someone decent on this stupid podcast. Here's question number two, Paul Putner.
Hmm.
Now, Paul Putner, the brilliant actor. Every actor loves the Oscars. And as an actor, do you ever dream of me winning one?
Of you winning one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't realise you had a pedigree in acting.
I've got absolutely none. But you know what? Mistakes get made, don't they?
Well, you could win an Academy Award for writing, couldn't you?
I could, I suppose. I mean, it's possible. It's not highly likely. I'd have to write something first.
You'd have to. But you see,
do
I ever dream about you winning an Oscar?
Mm.
Now that's seeded in my head. It's gone in the Rolodex in my brain. Mm. So there's every likelihood tonight, when I hit the sack, I will have a dream about you winning the Oscar. So potentially, yeah, that could be a thing.
Do you know what? Here's the thing. I wouldn't even mind just being in memoriam in the Oscars. As long as the Oscars knew I was there.
Yeah.
I'd be happy. But I don't think... I'm starting to think, anyway, Paul, that I'm not even going to get into in memoriam.
Well, how would you feel about hosting them?
I'd do it. I can take one to the chin.
Yeah.
You know? I can take a punch easily.
Yeah.
I'd definitely host it. I might drop them an email.
Yeah.
I'll ask the Oscars if they want to do leg haul.
Yeah.
You know, we can do a sort of a swap.
Take your leg out of my wife's mouth.
Oh, God. See, unfortunately, now that's in my Rolodex for tonight's nightmare, which is a little bit of a shame. So
we've been topical humour there.
yeah, exactly. I'm going to put horrific down on your down in your psychological profile, Paul Putner. We've gone to question number three.
Yeah.
What's this is another acting question.
Mm-hmm.
What's hardest, drama, comedy, or escape rooms?
I would say, I suppose the path of least resistance to me is comedy.
Yeah.
And I do have to kind of rein my performances in a little bit when I do drama.
Sure.
But with drama, if you're on stage, you can tell the audience if they're listening, but if you're not getting laughs, you can't really gauge it. But with comedy, if you're not getting the laughs, then you know you're going down the pan. So it's harder in that respect, because you don't really know when you're doing drama if you've died on stage or not. Escape rooms. Well, I've never been in an escape room.
No, of course you haven't. You're a fucking adult.
Yes, but surely if you're in an escape room, you're in charge of all the locking mechanisms.
Well, I suppose that's the thing about
a safe room, aren't I? I'm thinking about a safe room.
Yeah, you're thinking about, yes, you are. No, an escape room is for men children, let's call them that, they have to figure out clues to get out of a room. You pay money to be imprisoned for an hour.
Well, oh, that would be, I'm the most impractical person you could ever meet, so I would be a skeleton probably.
Well, I suppose that's where escape rooms maybe is easier than drama, because you definitely know when you're doing badly because you're still in a room.
And dying of starvation.
Dying of starvation.
Have you ever heard of those horror houses?
Yeah, I've heard of a ghost house.
Yeah, you go
a ghost house. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I've heard of them.
You go out to the, I don't know, the Nevada desert, and they've got a shack, which some people have kind of configured it into a Texas Chainsaw Massacre house, and you just get tortured for 24 hours, and they shave off your hair and put you in cages, bury you alive. Now, I reckon that's harder than an escape room.
Yeah. And the Wi-Fi is probably shit.
Yes. It's an endurance test.
Mm.
So comedy, drama, escape room. I think for me it's drama harder than comedy, but escape room harder than both. What if I'm doing a comedy drama in an escape room?
Well, it's going to happen at some point, isn't it? There's going to be a comedy drama set in an escape room.
Yeah.
Probably like a Black Mirror something.
There was a didn't Lee and Herring were going to write a sitcom called The Hostages or something?
I have no idea. I could text them.
Yeah. Just to quick. Radiator, yeah.
Let's see who gets back to us first.
Yeah.
It'll be Richard. So, well, here's the thing. I suppose drama's hard because the audience are respectful of drama.
Yeah.
As in, so it's not like, you know, they see a murder on stage and go, fucking hell.
Yeah.
You know, so that would suggest you're doing well, though.
Mm.
Maybe audiences need to give a bit more during dramas.
Yeah. Well, what
suggestion?
Crying.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Crying. Yeah.
Because you can get hire professional criers, can't you? Apparently.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think I get a lot of them for free. My yeah. audience. Yeah.
When you do your stand-up tragedy.
Yeah. That is my life. It's just a little bit of stand-up tragedy. It's fine. Yeah. I can live with it.
Yeah, so suppose, yeah, if you measured how well a drama was resonating with the audience would be how much they're crying or muttering under their breath, anger, and, you know. Yeah, I suppose anything, really.
Also, I think that's one of the benefits, isn't it, of smartphones. I suppose you know your drama's not going well when you look out to the audience and you see people on their phones.
Yeah. No, that's a dead giveaway, isn't it?
Also, aren't audiences awful? I hate them. I hate comedy audiences. I hate drama audiences. They're terrible people.
Yeah.
We should get rid of them.
I know. Well, we did, didn't we, for a couple of years recently.
That's true. And you know what? We were happier.
Yeah.
Fucking happier without those bastards.
Did you ever do any Zoom stand-up?
I did. I was terrible at it.
Yeah. Go on.
I saw people who were really good at it. And then I realised, no, I'm just not cut out for that. I'm too paranoid.
Well, it's very hard to start doing comedy in a vacuum, I imagine.
Yeah.
Did you watch the lockdown versions of Have I Got News for You?
No.
And they're all having to forcibly laugh at the other panelists' jokes.
Oh.
And it was just, you could see it was making them, it was so cringy. I don't know how they got through it, but they did it. So fair play to them. But it didn't lend itself to how to do a panel show on TV, really.
Yeah. The news really cut it, didn't it? You know, during lockdown. Like the news were like, we've still got it.
Yes.
It's just someone telling you something terrible straight to your face.
Yeah.
Well done, news. Well done, news.
Yeah,
we've got another. I'm going to put down Wise because you have never done an escape room because you're an adult. So I put down Wise. Here we go. Well, you know, if you don't do an escape, let's you and me do an escape room,
and we'll do an episode of Cold Feet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Then.
In the escape room.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just have Mrs. Brown's boys constantly playing until we fucking figure out how to get out of this fucking room. I think that's fair. Now, good idea.
Talking of the news, I was thinking, watching it the other day, how people do that nodding when they're doing just before they speak, if they're talking from another country, they're on the satellite. Do you think we keep talking over each other? So shall I nod?
Yeah, would you mind? Yeah.
I know we can't see each other, but I'm nodding now to say I'm about to speak.
That's great.
Right. No, that's not going to work, is it?
Oh, I think I'll be fine. I mean, I think, and also, I think our listeners would be very happy to hear a bit of fucking professionalism for once from one of the guests. Because I'll be honest with you, not all of them are as good as you, mate. Here we go. We've got another question coming up. Paul Putner.
Yes.
Question number, I think it's 4, it might be 5, I can't really remember. Here we go. Paul Putner. We are all aware of the news that Prime Minister Liz Truss resigned yesterday. Can you remember where you were when you stopped laughing?
Oh, about 10 minutes ago, I think.
Well, when you heard Boris might be coming back.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, what... It's just like they might as well have a little turnstile, right?
I know. But, you know, did he have to say fucking anything today? Can we not have a couple of days of just laughing?
Yeah, yeah.
No, but he had to go, do you know what? I might come back.
I noticed your tweet. I thought it was funny because I did a little sharp intake of breath when you said, oh, has anyone done a Sugar Babes joke today? And I thought when it was happening, I thought, hey, that's like the Sugar Babes. Or maybe Trigger's broom from Only Fools and Horses. And I thought, no, someone will do that tomorrow. And sure enough, you were right.
There we go. Do you know what? You would be amazed, even in 2022, on the day of like the London Marathon, how many tweets are still, you know, going, oh, I thought it was called Snickers now, in 2022.
Really?
People still tweet that.
The one I really hate is whenever celebrity's name comes up trending, people go, normally with a gif of Denzel Washington looking relieved, go, you, I almost had a heart attack when I saw them. Thank goodness or whatever. You know, it's, look, I don't know, is it a running joke on Twitter to do that? Or they get retweeted as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. They go, oh, my God, you know, whoever it is, David Jason, don't do that to me, Twitter. I feel the worst. Well, do you know what? If you admire this person so much that you think the only thing possibly that they could do anytime you see their name is they're dead.
Yeah.
That's, oh, my God, he's only capable of being dead. No, turns out, no.
No, well, that's
he can thinking. Do something else as well.
That's what I was thinking. Tom Baker, he comes up a lot. Yeah. And it's all the few and relieved gifts and all of that. And I think if he ever looks at Twitter, he must feel his own pulse. Still there, Tom, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think it'll be nice to, I mean, I don't want Tom Baker to die. I'm a big fan of Tom Baker. But but when he dies, maybe we should sort of constantly tweet, going, where's the fucking remorse now?
Yeah.
You know what? A day of remorse isn't enough. You guys were losing your shit every fucking 5 minutes that you saw his name. You should be going out of your mind.
Yeah.
You should be having fucking months off work. You should be seeking fucking counselling. Anyway, I'm going to put down very wise here on your psychological profile. I told you to be quite crawly bum licky.
The other thing I thought was, and I tweeted something about, do you think at Madame Tussauds they've melted down Boris Johnson and reconfigured his wig into a blonde bob? And now,
that's
after just a month and a half, they've got to melt it all down again.
I know. Here's the thing. I actually did think that yesterday, and I had a picture in my head of they're at Madame Tussauds and literally just doing the last bit to one of Liz Truss's eyebrows. What? Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, it's like all those Liz Truss lookalikes just being signed to an agency or people who can do impressions. Gone.
This is completely true, right? I knew someone in the early 90s who basically made money being a Thatcher lookalike.
Yeah. Right?
And the day Thatcher resigned, I turned up to a pub knowing she was going to be there. I said, oh, I'll see all my friends. Isn't that nice? Went to the pub. She was there and she was in fucking tears because she just went, well, that's it. That's all my work gone. Well, in one way, I could see why that would upset you. But on the other hand, Thatcher isn't here anymore.
That reminds me, I went to see the late, great Ian Cognito, who passed away recently on stage, of course. It's quite a freaky thing. But I saw him on the night, I think it was 1990, when Thatcher left.
Right.
In Crawley at the Hawth. And he came on stage holding like a massive pile of paper, foolscap paper, and then just threw it all in the air and said, well, that's 10 years of material gone.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. There was a lot of the likes of Kevin Day going, for years, railing against Thatcher and going, oh, God damn it. Yeah. You know, I could have had one more joke. I could have had two more jokes. It was like the end of Schindler's List, basically, with Guy Raiders in the early 90s. That's all I'm saying.
then you get the careful what you wish for. When I remember Rory Bremner bemoaning the state of doing impressions of politicians in the 90s, late 90s. he said, because they're all so bland. They all have the same public speaking training and how to, you know, they all have the same gestures. They all wear the same suits. There's nothing, it's not like the old spitting image days where you could distinguish. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Certainly got all those characters back again, didn't he?
And then look what happened.
We have Warner Brothers cartoons running the world.
It's quite depressing, isn't it, Paul?
Yes.
Right. I'm going to put quite depressing down on your psychological profile. I've got another question for you, Paul, and I'm looking forward to this one.
Come on, I'm not a quitter.
No. I'll put that down. Not a quitter. Not a quitter.
But I'm resigning for this podcast.
Yes. Paul.
Yeah.
It's question number something or other. Right. It's about that. Let's talk about the band Madness. Can you remember when you first heard Madness?
Well, I believe that there's two times really where I was I didn't know who they were. I saw an episode of Magpie.
Wow.
Would have been either late 78, early 79. Apparently, it's their first TV appearance.
Right.
And Suggs must have been at the football, so they did One Step Beyond, and he wasn't there.
Ah, okay.
It's not on YouTube. I've been trying to track it down, actually, because after they finished their little performance, they sat all the kids on the stage and said, what did you think of it? And some of the kids were quite critical, if I recall. But I didn't know who they were then. But then I used to listen to the Top 40 in the bath on a Sunday evening.
Yeah.
I used to have a cassette player plugged into the mains, perched precariously on the edge of the bath.
Sure.
Listening to absolutely sensational Tony Blackburn. And it came on while I was lathering up, and I thought, well, this is really great. I love this. Sounds a bit like Ian Dury, who I was a big fan of. So, yeah, I think knowingly it was in the bath, but I do remember Magpie, and that would have come out before the Top 40, which would have been summer of 79. I can't remember.
Yeah. But basically, Tony Blackburn got you into Madness.
Yeah, indirectly, I suppose, yeah.
He was a big pusher, wasn't he, of the ska movement?
Well, he was a soul boy, really, isn't he?
I have no idea, to be honest. I'm well aware of his existence, but I can't really remember anything he ever did or said other than he cried over his wife leaving him.
Tessa Wyatt.
That's what I remember. Tessa Wyatt, yeah, from Robin's Nest.
Ran off with Richard O'Sullivan, didn't she?
Oh, did she? I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
She didn't run very far. She was working with him.
No. Yeah, he was very cut up about that. And funny enough, I remember having a chat once with Paul Whitehouse. And when they used to do the Smashy and Nicey, in the Smashy and Nicey special, they did, called End of an Era. And Tony Blackburn came up to him and said, I really love Smashy and Nicey. It's not been great for our profile, our image, the old school Radio 1. He said, but it's very funny. But you really did hurt my feelings when you took the mickey out of my breakdown. So just to let you know, when you do these things, there are people affected, even all these years on. And Whitehouse said, I felt bloody awful.
Yeah, I imagine. Holy shit. Yeah, it's you know, I'm sure that it could happen to any of us though, right? You know, you make a joke and you go, well, guess what?
Have you ever bumped into someone you've made a joke about on stage or publicly?
No, just generally I think if I make jokes, it's about about comedy rather than any specific comedian, sort of. Yeah. And generally comedians don't like that joke. They go, well, that's not very funny, is it? I mean, we all do that sort of thing. Well, you know, sorry I hurt your very sensitive feelings, comedians. But, you know, I think comedians are there to be laughed at as well as laughed with.
Oh, yeah, because going back to Lee and Herring, in their This Morning with Richard Not Judy, they used to do a lot of taking a piss out of lazy comedy.
Lazy comedy slags.
Lazy comedy slags and the alternative history of comedy and all of that.
Yeah.
And Stuart used to get proper grief from some of the people on the circuit saying, how dare you give away the Paul Beckham reveal? He says, I can't do that in my act now because people go,
Yeah, and if you remember, of course, I imagine you do remember because you were in the TV show, but when it came to lazy comedy slags, you remember they had sort of a very generic little cartoon drawing thing of some just men who looked like they might have been comedians, except one, they didn't even try to hide the fact that it was clearly Lee Hurst.
Oh, Lee, Lee Hurst,
That one's Lee Hurst.
But we got quite cross because they had Adam Bloom in the the little running along.
Did they? Oh, okay. Yeah,
and Stuart and Richard was quite sort of, well, who said put him in? Because the cartoonist, he decided he didn't like him, so added him.
Right.
But he's one of the least lazy comedians.
Oh, absolutely. My God. Yeah.
Very clever material he does. I haven't seen him in years. Yeah. Is he still about?
Oh, he is, yeah. Oh, and, you know, he's still incredibly good and very, very, very smart and, you know, sometimes quite exhausting.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's and I love him for that, you know. He's a good fella. He made me become vegan, you know.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because he did some jokes about vegans on stage and it made me so angry I decided to become vegan. It wasn't the joke that really upset me. It was the audience going, "Whee!" instead of laughing. And I went, "Oh, you cunt." And I decided to give up meat and dairy. So there you go.
God, don't ever go and see Jimmy Carr then.
No.
You'll convert to so many things.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I'm giving up rape. Oh, yeah. We've got more questions here.
All right, what was that one question? Oh, it was madness, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, we're well on to the madness section.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, by the way, the here's the thing. My teenage favourite band, and you're not going to like this.
Go on.
The first real obsession band I ever had were Marillion.
All right.
Nah. Yeah, exactly. You're right to go back a little bit. But here's the thing. Mm. My story of how I heard Marillion for the very first time, I still look back on very fondly because it was a guy who was profoundly deaf recommended Marillion to me. So it's true. It's completely true. A guy who's completely deaf said, you're going to love this band. So a guy, he'd never heard them, but he knew that I would just like them. So I got a recommendation on music by a deaf guy. There you go.
Well, they used to have quite striking artwork.
Yes, they did. He liked that, but also I think he liked the pontiness of Fish, which it turns out so did I.
Yeah, I read an interview with him. He seems quite a nice bloke.
Oh, yeah, I think he is. I think he's a very lovely fella. Yeah. And, you know, I'm still very fond of him, but more in a, oh, don't do that, Dad, way.
I know he's still making music and Marillion, it's with Steve Hackett now, isn't it?
Steve Hogarth.
Hogarth.
I reckon they would have replaced him with Steve Hackett if they could have.
Steve Hogarth. Yeah. Sorry, Steve Hackett.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Then they're kind of a he does his solo stuff and they're doing their thing. Yeah. But they've been going longer without him.
Oh, far longer. Yeah.
A bit like the Strangers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But we want to talk about Madness. So here's the next question about Madness. Mm. Paul Putner, how many members of Madness have you touched?
I've touched all of them.
Whoa. Okay. So I'm going to put Hansy. But Hansy, old Paul.
Yeah.
Okay. So where did you meet them?
I met them at a charity football match in the early 80s.
Oh, okay.
Where they were playing against Imagination and Musical Youth.
Right.
So I think I met a few of them then, and they were very muddy. I remember that. And then I met them at I went along to a sound check for a Christmas gig they did in 83. And Ian Dury was there as well, and Paul Whitehouse, funnily enough, and Nigel Planer from the Young Ones. And I met Madness there. I met a few of them, but not all of them. And then just gradually over the years, I met Bedders, the bass player, at David Arnold's birthday party.
Wow. All right.
Right. So I kind of cornered him by the Vulavons for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And I just, after a gig, if I've got a mate as a backstage, you know, I sort of have a brief chat and say hello. I remember once in the Assembly Bar, Chaz Smash came in during the Edinburgh Festival. Mm-hmm. This was about 10, 15 years ago. And I got to know Suggs a little bit over the years. So I thought, well, he's in my world now. I'm going to go over and, you know, welcome him. And so I went over and I went, oh, hello, Chaz, Carl, rather. I said, I'm a sort of an acquaintance of Suggs. And he just put his hands on my shoulders and just lifted me out of the way, saying, how lovely for you. Bye.
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah, he seems like he might be the most intense member of the band.
Yeah, I mean, he was. I mean, he did it with a grin, and I've met him since.
Oh, okay.
He's very pleasant. But yeah, he's not actually in the band anymore.
No, he's not. No.
No, he's left for the past few years. Yeah, you know. So I have. I suppose I have. I've touched their hands. Handsy.
I've only touched one member of Madness. I've touched Bedders, and it was. I've got this problem, Paul. If I meet someone, especially musicians, if I meet a musician that I really admire, I will say something stupid within the first 2 or 3 seconds.
All right,
and it happened with Bedders. I was introduced to him by Terry Edwards because they have their jazz band together. So. I was there to see them, and Bedders couldn't find a place to park, so it took him ages to get to the actual venue, and eventually he's there like with 5 minutes to spare before the beginning of the gig, and he just went, oh, sorry about that, and he was introduced to me, and I'm like, hello, and he went, oh, yeah, I'm a bit flustered, couldn't find anywhere to park, I had to just drive round and round the block like about 10 times. And I know you know what I'm going to say, don't you? And I went, oh, you like driving in your car? And he went, and walked away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
They're not up for that. I once went to see Elvis Costello and the Attractions at the Royal Albert Hall, 1986. And we were waiting outside, little fanboys, quite a big group of us, to get our program signed by the band. And Steve Naive, the keyboard player of the Attractions, came out in big sunglasses, signed the programs, and then fell face first into a massive puddle.
Oh, God. He rolled off the floor. Oh, no. Oh, that's
shit. And I did say, come on, accidents will happen. And then someone else... Well, I can't stand up for falling down.
Yeah.
He just ran.
Yeah, because, you know, there's probably two or three more song titles you could get out of it, and you just didn't want to hear them.
Tiny Steps.
Yeah. I don't know if he has a song called You've Fallen Face First Into a Puddle, but if he had, he doesn't want to hear it right now.
I tell you what, joking aside, it was horrible, actually, because it was so humiliating and so unexpected. Yeah.
And the thing is, I think if you do see someone that you admire, all of a sudden humiliated, and it's you go, oh, Christ, this isn't how we're ever supposed to meet. You're fucking fallible. What's going on?
The other thing, of course, when I met them as a kid, a teenager, I had posters of them all over my wall in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And when I came back, suddenly they'd been humanized. They were not these deities. They were just blokes. And of course, the other thing, they weren't dressed in the suits and the fezes and the pith helmet and all that. They were dressed very casually.
Yeah.
You know, just looked like, and they were smoking and just looked like ordinary blokes. And you think, oh, yeah. And it just felt very strange having the posters up after that. I think they did gradually down.
I suppose it's the thing, isn't it, about meeting bands after, you know, the gig. Mm. There must be a feeling of, you know, I'm off stage now. You know, I don't do a gig after the gig. I'm just here and having a drink. So don't stare at me like I'm about to, you know, fucking launch into Stairway to Heaven just for you.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And that's why, Paul, that is why all three members of REM have told me to fuck off on three separate occasions separately. There you go.
Really? Really?
That really happened. All three members, Peter Buck, Michael Stipe, Mike Mills, they've all told me to fuck off.
Why? What did you say?
I annoyed Peter Buck, but I saw him at a Soft Boys gig, and I kept saying to him, you should get up on the stage, you should get up on the stage, and it annoyed him so much. He threw his drink to the floor and went, oh, fuck off, and then walked away. So I totally understand I'm in the wrong there.
Yeah.
But then there was another time I saw Michael Stipe at a restaurant, and and I shouted, fucking hell, it's Michael Stipe! And he was on his own, eating. And he just went, oh, fuck off. And got up from his table and paid and left. And it was like, oh, God.
Awful. That was
I don't think shouting in a restaurant is cool. And I shouldn't have done that. Anyway, then I saw Mike Mills. Mm. And he was queuing up at a bar. And I just wanted to tell him something really complimentary, tell him, you know, he's brilliant. And he missed his chance to get served. And he just went, oh, motherfucker, right in my face. So, you know, all three members. And I'm going to get Bill Berry one day.
This one goes out to the one I hate then, is it?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, my favourite is a friend of mine went to see Dexys Midnight Runners.
Right.
In Brighton. I think it was when they briefly got back together again. Or maybe it was a Kevin Rowland solo gig. And he saw Kevin Rowland having a crafty cigarette at the backstage, at the stage door at the end of the show. So he went up to him and went, hi, Kevin, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a lyric that I've always been a bit unsure about. I wonder if you could tell me what it means. And he went, yeah, all right, then what is it? It's... Kevin Rowland, oh, fuck off.
Yep. I mean, and which is weird because he normally likes a laugh.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He doesn't. No. He doesn't like a laugh in any way. Fuck me, that is funny. I met him once and I was very clever that day. I kept my mouth shut. I took one look at him and went, nope. I'm not supposed to be in the same room as him. So I'm going to pretend that I'm not in the same room as him and I'm going to shut up. So, you know, I do know how to keep my mouth shut. I just forget sometimes.
Yeah, you've got to sometimes keep your gob shut.
Yeah. I think, you know, your heroes should never meet you. You're awful. So, you know, I'll just keep my mouth shut. Here's question number 8, Paul Putner. Mm. If you met someone today who had never heard of Madness, what would you recommend? A punch in the face or a kick in the bollocks?
Well, A Kick in the Bollocks, I think, was the B-side of House of Fun.
Yep, good job.
Punch in the face, kick in the bollocks. How about a punch in the bollocks?
I think that's fair. Do you know what? You're very very even-minded, aren't you?
Hmm.
Whatever that means. I'm putting it down in your psychological profile. Here's the truth of it. I do, when I meet someone who sort of, you know, goes, I've never heard of, what, you know, whatever famous band. Hmm. There was a time I would actually be angry about that. Go, what the fuck are you talking about? But now if I meet someone who goes, oh, Sparks, I think I've heard of Sparks. Are they good? I go, oh, my God, you've got all of Sparks to look forward to.
I know.
Ah, I would love to have that feeling all over again.
Yes.
So I'm actually jealous when I meet people who don't, you know, who don't know all the things I know,
Have you ever got anyone into Iggy Pop? Because I know you're a big Iggy Pop fan.
I'm not 100% sure I have. I think Iggy Pop's, you know, he's been around for a bit. He's not some new indie upstart. To be honest, I feel I've only really got into him in the last 10 years. But I love him. I love him like I've been in love with his records all my life. And I'll be honest with you, up until about 10 years ago, I think I only had three of his albums. And it's the obvious three. So yeah. I would like to think that someone who came to see the show, I'm going to check that guy out. But probably it's much more likely they went, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, did you get people coming up to you saying, do you know what, I could take or leave Madness, but actually, I've listened to them now, and they're brilliant. And did you ever get that from your show?
From quite young people. I know some people came with their kids, and they said that they were getting very much into Madness now, or were listening to them, which they hadn't listened to before. In fact, it reminds me of about 10 years ago, my young nephew was in the back of the car. His dad was driving, and he was singing Our House.
Oh, right.
Our House, because it had been on the Olympics. I think they'd also done it on top of Buckingham Palace for the Queen's Jubilee. So it was it's been played on the radio again, and he liked it. And I said to him, oh, you want to listen to some of their other stuff if you like this? And he went, oh, they're a bit old. So I went, oh, okay. I said, all right, so what are you into then? I like AC/DC.
To be fair, one of them's still at school.
That's true. Yeah, but he likes AC/DC because he likes Iron Man, which the music is in.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, that's a weird thing, isn't it? Like little kids, if Iron Maiden, you know, could figure out a way of never dying, they would always have an audience, wouldn't they? Forever, for all eternity. Because little kids love Iron Maiden, just like little kids love AC/DC. It's, you know,
yeah,
it's,
something about them.
They're good first bands.
That's what I think. I've got a theory about why little kids love the Beatles. I think it's because it's the melodies are almost like nursery rhymes.
Yeah. And they've got they've got a lot of songs that are very obviously for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yellow Submarine, I suppose, is a gateway song for kids. But they can probably get their heads around it. Day in the life. Madness are quite good for kids. Because was always the thing with them. They always got written off as a kids band. Because they used to do gigs. They used to do two gigs quite often on tour in the early days. One for the kids in the afternoon and one for the grown-ups because of the alcohol.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing, isn't it? You know?
I think it's a great thing. I think, and here's something. I bet you'll agree with me on this. One of the great things about loving madness is when you go on holiday and you hear them out of context, like you have not pressed play. You're in a bar, and I mean this specifically. At a time I was in Chicago, in a bar, and our house came on. I was like, "Holy fucking shit! I'm in America listening to madness. It's amazing."
Well, our house was the only hit they had there, really.
They're
a bit like Come On Eileen for Dexys again, you know. They're regarded as one-hit wonders. I think It Must Be Love kind of was sort of hung about the very lower ends of Billboard. That was the next single after that. And then they're just like a college band over there, really.
Yeah. Now, I have to remind you that the answer to the question was you would punch them in the bollocks. So I'll put violent.
Violent.
Yeah. Violent. Here's question number 9. And we're back to the world of acting. Paul, you are a brilliant actor. And we don't just want to talk about madness. We'd like to know more about your career and your work. So who is the biggest arsehole you've ever worked with?
The biggest arsehole I've ever worked with. Ah, now this is a leading question, isn't it?
It's a little bit leading, yeah. I mean, you could see how someone could easily get tricked into saying something they shouldn't by a question like this.
I mean, I've been very lucky. I don't remember working with. I mean, there are arseholes who aren't famous.
Right.
In the early, I mean, when I was starting out and you're doing like rep my first job, I worked with some real arseholes because there's a real pecking order. And then 10 years down the line, you see them in an audition and they're kind of back down the pecking order again. And you think, God, you're acting like Sir Jeremy Irons at the Pit Lockery Festival Theatre, but now you're just going up for this toilet roll commercial like me. Yeah.
Right.
I can't think of any, certainly not particularly any celebrities who've been arseholes. Okay. They've all been nice. I'll tell you what, though. Go on.
No, I was going to say, so should we just say Hugh Laurie, someone like that?
Never worked with Hugh Laurie.
Oh, damn it. So we can't say Paul Putner thinks Hugh Laurie is an arsehole. That's a shame. That's a shame. That would have been a real. That would have been a coup for this podcast. But it doesn't matter. You might work with him soon, and if you could come back on and call him an arsehole, that'd be great.
Why don't we take a really well known actor and say, "Oh, I think he's an arsehole," and it will seem like I've worked with him.
Yeah, Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel, God, a real tosser.
Absolute cunt. Him.
He was always moaning about in catering. Yeah. He made life hell for me in rehearsals.
Yeah, shitty acting.
Yeah. When we were doing Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah.
I was one of the aliens.
You played, Curious Alien.
Yeah. Curious Alien, yeah.
This is the final question. I'm going to put down hates Vin Diesel. Seems all right, doesn't it? Seems all right. It's a final question for you, Paul. This is a question that all the guests get. Paul Putner, what is leg hole? What do you think? What do you think has happened here today?
I think I've come over as exasperated.
I'm gonna put that down. Exasperated. Okay, and you think that's what this podcast is? It's you being exasperated.
I think there's a lot of. I think I've got an inner bully, which has been
mate. We all do, and it's lovely when it comes out.
Yeah,
you know,
do you have an inner bully?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I do a lot of comparing, and the inner bully just comes right out.
I will think when this podcast is over, I'm going to go, oh, I wish I you could have done that better. You that wasn't very funny, and I hope he doesn't think this and all of that. It's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, well, I'm sad to hear that. I'm going to put self-loathing, okay? down in your... Well, that's a bit of a bummer to end on that, but... Well, there's nothing we could do, is it, Paul? That's the note that we decided to close the show on.
I know.
From Paul Putney, here's one thing I can tell you.
Yeah.
From the questions asked and the answers gathered, Paul Putney, you are puritanical, horrific, wise. You're very wise. You're quite depressing. Not a quitter. Handsy. Even-minded. Violent. You hate Vin Diesel. You're exasperated and you're self-loathing. And all of those things, Paul, come together to make the beautiful creature that is Paul Putner. Everyone applauds. Everyone applauds. Yay, Paul Putner.
Or pope.
Oh, fuck you. You'd make such a good pope. That's when your inner bully would really come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those fucking Protestants wouldn't stand a chance if you were pope, mate.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I felt quite...
Paul Putner. Yeah, no, you'd be a fucking great pope. Fuck it. Yeah. Do you know what? I wish we hadn't said Vin Diesel. I wish we had said, you know, whoever the pope is these days. Who's the pope these days?
Who's what's his
pope
name?
Pope Kevin. Yeah. What's Runcie? His name? Pope Liz Truss. That's him.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Putner, thank you so much for falling into the leg hole today and being a wonderful guest. I adore you, quite frankly, and I don't mind saying it as a matter of public record.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Thank you so much for inviting me on, and I hope I filled the remit of the leg hole.
I hope it's recorded, quite frankly.
Yeah, so do I. Otherwise, we're going to have to record it all over again, say all the same funny things and try and
at
be...
At least we've got the answers.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you very much, listeners. We will see you here in the Leg Hole again some other time in the future. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.